robberies, murders, even terrorist attacks. All across the country, police have convinced communities to pay for mass surveillance systems like license plate readers, claiming they will help stop the most serious crimes. But once these ever-watchful electronic eyes are installed in your city, it's not just violent criminals they're recording, it's everyone.
Time and time again, we've seen police surveillance suffer from mission creep. Technology that was sold as a way to catch killers ends up being used to enforce traffic violations, track protesters, and more. I'm Hudson Hongo.
And I'm Christian Romero. This is Effector from the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Later, I'll be quizzing Christian on some of this week's most surprising headlines.
We'll also let you know about some upcoming opportunities to connect with EFF.
But first, we'll be talking about mission creep and how it explains the disturbing normalization of mass surveillance technology. So like I said in the intro, today I wanted to talk about mission creep, which it's sort of a funny term because it itself suffers a bit from mission creep. I imagine you've run into this phrase a few times, Christian.
I have, and I've never thought of it that way, that the phrase itself suffers from what the phrase says. That's really clever and really funny to think about.
So, right, in general, this term, it refers to a narrow mission with defined objectives that over time sprawls out in the original sort of military context it was used in. It talked about sort of conflicts that like, oh, maybe have a defined mission and then become, you know, this expansive quagmire. In our work, we see a lot where often with surveillance or any technologies, data is collected for one purpose and ends up being used in a totally different way.
Yeah, I like this phrase because it's really easy to apply it to your day-to-day life or things that you're really passionate about and then, you know, see like, oh, I can see how this, like this philosophy, I guess, would be used in the police or surveillance context. And it can be really spooky to think about.
Yeah, I mean, I think one interesting illustration is I seem to remember EFF recording an audio version of their newsletter that eventually became a whole separate podcast. Does this ring a bell?
Yeah. Is this the good kind of mission creep or the bad kind? You can decide for yourself, listener.
So the reason why I wanted to talk about it today was because there was a story out of Georgia that I think illustrated the concept really well. Our colleague Matt Gariglia blogged about it under the headline, Traffic Violation. License plate reader mission creep is already here. Did you read that story?
I did. How could I not with a headline like that? It's very good.
So, right, this was a situation where a license plate reader was used to enforce a traffic violation, which I thought was pretty interesting. To unpack this more, I talked with our colleague Adam Schwartz, who is EFF's privacy litigation director. Let's listen to that. Hi, Adam. Thanks for making the time to chat.
Thank you for having me here.
Today, I wanted to talk with you about a concept sometimes called mission creep, one that we see a lot with police technology. Can you share just a quick definition of what mission creep usually means in the surveillance context?
Yeah, the idea is that the government acquires a surveillance technology to deal with ticking bombs or the worst of the worst. And then they put up the hardware and spend the money and the product spreads. And eventually we are not stopping ticking bombs or the worst of the worst, but we are finding people who didn't pay their parking ticket or who showed up at protests. And so the mission that the technology was supposed to do has crept from something big to everything.
Yeah, and specifically, there was a recent story reported by 404 Media that I think really illustrated this phenomenon well. It was about a traffic ticket in Georgia. Can you summarize the story, which we blogged about briefly?
Yeah, so the license plate reader system is supposed to be looking at license plates. They're called automatic license plate readers. And the vendors and the police typically agree that the function of this system is to identify license plates of interest and investigate crimes associated with those license plates.
In this particular case, a license plate reader photographed a motorcyclist in Georgia who was allegedly looking at their cell phone while riding. Police then ticketed the motorcyclist, listing captured on camera holding phone in left hand on the ticket.
And so this is an example of mission creep because the system was designed to do surveillance of license plates and has actually ended up also doing surveillance of what drivers are doing in their cars, including their faces and their activities.
Yeah. So automated license plate readers, for those of our listeners who aren't totally familiar, these are a powerful surveillance technology. Networks of sometimes tens of thousands of cameras across the country that police can use to warrantlessly reconstruct someone's movements by seeing where their vehicles were. And in this case, it was a Flock safety system being used in Georgia. And as we pointed out in a blog post last year, just last year, Flock explicitly claimed that their systems are, quote, not used to enforce traffic violations, right? I think they've tried to, right, like you say, talk about these ticking bomb type scenarios, but as we've seen, it gets used in totally different contexts than those they're originally pitched in.
So, as you say, you know, the automatic license plate reader at its core is a system of at this point, you know, tens of thousands of cameras all around the country, and all of the images of plates that are time stamped and location stamped going into databases and being used. You can have, you know, the most ironclad agreement or perhaps just a pinky promise. But once you spend the money to put up the hardware, there inevitably is the temptation to mission creep. So the camera goes up, we're going to capture plates. But when they capture a face, even though there's a policy that says we're not looking at, you know, faces, we're not using this for traffic enforcement, that's what the cops actually are doing in practice.
In the last year or so, we've seen that a lot of communities are awakening to the incredible potential for misuse that this technology has. And when they do, we've seen it time and time again, police and the ALPR vendors will trot out specific stories about serious exceptional crimes that they've said were investigated using this technology. But I think we both know that doesn't capture the full picture, does it?
It does not. So, you know, taking again, you know, license plate readers, there is a, you know, wildfire of members of the public who are saying we don't want this in our communities. And city councils across America are ending their contracts with vendors like Flock and others to provide their license plate readers. That wildfire is driven by many factors. Probably the biggest one is concern that the federal government is going to use this locally collected movement data to find and deport immigrants. And so communities are rising up and saying, no, we want to be a welcoming place for our immigrant neighbors. And so they're saying no to these Flock contracts. And so then the counter argument, as you say, is, but if you get rid of the Flock contracts, what are we going to do about the ticking bomb situation? What are we going to do about the worst of the worst situation? Here is, you know, our claim that you know, we have solved crime with it. And so then the privacy advocate response to that is, well, number one, let's take a close look at your claims that this crime was solved with this surveillance technology. And sometimes it's true, and sometimes there's less than meets the eye. And what we should not do is trust the assistant chief of police and the vendor salesperson that the crime was solved. We need to have independent journalists and researchers and social scientists look at these claims and see whether they're true. And then number two, you know, even assuming that the surveillance technology is sometimes solving important or serious crimes, that is only one element of the cost-benefit analysis. And the costs include that we are deporting immigrants with this technology, and that we are turning everybody's life into an open book, and that we have these databases that can be stolen by foreign adversaries.
Right. You know, they sell the public this some sort of crime-fighting tech, right? And bring up these sort of serious exceptional crimes. But once it's installed, it's just, it's there. It's there every day. It becomes everyday surveillance, and police can use it to, you know, enforce traffic offenses to police homelessness, dissent. I mean, just last year, we had an EFF investigation that found hundreds of ALPR searches from police who were searching topics related to protests or related terms like no kings, right? They say it's, you know, there to stop murders and might trot out one or two cases, but then we see all the other ways it's being used. They are not as keen to talk about the failures of this technology.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of police surveillance technologies where we have seen the mission creep, and we can talk about a bunch of them. Before we move on, you know, let's drill into the mission creep with the license plate readers. So, you know, we're told this is going to solve the worst, most dangerous crimes. This is going to, you know, let us, you know, deal with the ticking bomb. But what we actually see is there are police departments that are using the license plate readers to find people who haven't paid their traffic tickets. And when they are stopped by the police, having been detected by the plate readers, they're being told, you know, write us a check to pay your parking ticket or we're going to arrest you. So it's a revenue generation tool. As you say, in the last year, we have evidence that they're using it to investigate people who attend protests. We know in one case of an investigation of a person who left their home state where abortion was illegal, and the plate readers were used to investigate that. We know that license plate readers have systematically been used to investigate people of Roma descent, who tragically in many American communities are viewed as inherently criminal. It's one of the worst forms of racist policing in America. And we know that police officers were going to their plate data and typing in racist epithets for Roma people that I won't repeat in order to just see what they were doing, you know, in the local community. So this is, you know, the mission creep. We will get the plate readers and we will find the person who has committed a murder. But it's actually being used to find traffic scofflaws and protesters and immigrants and members of oppressed racial minorities in America. That's the mission creep with license plate readers.
And like you said, I mean, thanks to the sort of dogged work by journalists and other researchers, we know today about a lot of these issues, specifically in the license plate reader context. But like you said, those aren't the only sort of surveillance technology that this happens with. I know right now we're seeing a lot of police departments are getting surveillance drones and have given different sorts of explanations about why this is a crucial technology.
Yeah, I think surveillance police drones are another good example to talk about mission creep. So, you know, it begins and the scenario is, you know, there's been like a terrorist explosion and we need to figure out how to deploy officers to the scene. Or somebody has, you know, kidnapped the mayor's kid. And so we need to follow them with a drone. And so it has, you know, expanded from, you know, these kinds of worst of the worst scenarios to literally the most extreme form of mission creep, which is drone as first responder. So there's been a 911 call, you know, of which there are in many communities are, you know, hundreds in a day. And once the dispatcher determines that there is something to investigate, they send a drone as a first responder. It's the name of the program. So it's literally potentially every crime in the city with this program. And we know of cases where, for example, the crime so-called being committed is that a homeless person is in a location that they should not be because it's private property. So, you know, we're not trying to do, you know, emergency response to a terrorist disaster. We literally are trying to, you know, drive homeless people out of our communities, you know, rather than giving them, you know, the social services they need. So the drones are another example among many of the mission creep that comes with these surveillance technologies.
I believe the ACLU has a suit in Sonoma County, California, over a drone program that was introduced. I believe it was pitched as a way to uncover illicit pot growing operations, and now is being used to investigate code violations like building a shed on your property without a permit. I don't think it's any mistake. You know, you mentioned these, what are truly sort of cinematic scenarios. And I think we all know that that's like not what life looks like. I don't think there should be that much surprise that if you, I'm sorry, if you give your police the terrorism foiler 9000, that when they have that sitting in their department every day, that that's not mostly what they're going to end up using it for.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the boys like to play with the toys. Again, once you spend the money on the hardware and you train the staff how to use the hardware and the staff, you know, just have the entire array of things that they are investigating, there is the intrinsic temptation to use the hardware to solve other problems. And so the mission creep is just built into the acquisition. Just another example, you know, we've talked about the ALPRs because that's the thing that just happened with the, you know, the person photographed holding a cell phone. And we've talked about the drones as first responders. Another example is the cell site simulator. So this is a technology that was built by the government to use in foreign battlefields for intelligence gathering, you know, to more effectively wage war. And it came back to the American streets. What this technology does is, it's in the name, it is pretending to be a cell site, meaning a telephone, you know, communications tower. And it is used most commonly to find the location of a phone you're looking for, or to identify all the phones that are near you in order to you know who is near you. And so when the cell site simulator gets to the United States and is in the hands of law enforcement, it is, you know, marketed as a way to solve murders and to arrest people who are wanted on warrants for being suspected, you know, violent felons. In practice, the mission creep sets in to the point that someone steals $50 of fast food without threatening anyone else. And the police are using a cell site simulator to, you know, hunt down this misdemeanant. So the mission creep is intrinsic in whatever their surveillance technology is. It's going to start with finding the murderers, and then we're using it to find people who steal $50 worth of fast food.
I'm glad you brought up cell site simulators, which some of our listeners might have heard to refer to as stingrays, because I think this sort of concept, it feels very closely linked to the general militarization of police. The government develops these technologies, right, or even weapons for battlefields, and then we end up seeing them used for domestic policing. But with the surveillance, it literally is, you know, cell phone signals are invisible, right? These devices are often hidden away. I mean, even disguised. I guess what really alarms me is the way that these technologies normalize mass surveillance or warrantless surveillance, right? They're brought in, they just become part of the architecture infrastructure of policing.
Yeah, no, that's right. There's a few things you've said that I want to double click on. One of them is frequently the secrecy of these technologies. And so, you know, so one layer is the mission creep. The technology comes in, it's going to find the murderers, and then it's being used to find the homeless people or the protesters or what have you. And this frequently overlaps with the public has no idea what's going on because the government doesn't tell anyone that the surveillance technology is here, which did happen with cell site simulators. The dominant American vendors, including, as you mentioned, Stingray, made police departments sign contracts that said the police departments wouldn't talk publicly about the cell site simulators. And in fact, when there were prosecutions of people based on evidence from these technologies, and judges said, I'm giving you a choice, you know, prosecutor, you're going to tell me about the cell site simulator, or you're going to dismiss the charges against this accused. Police dismiss the charges rather than tell the judge about the cell site simulator. That's how secretive it was. So there's a serious secrecy problem. Number two, the mission creep. One dimension of it is from the police department acquiring it to find murderers and then using it to find the homeless. Another aspect of the mission creep is the military acquires it to do whatever they're doing. And then the mission creeps to the American streets. One dimension of that, as you say, the military has the tradition of taking its surplus equipment and turning it over to for civilian use. And so a lot of this is, you know, concerning to a lot of people. It's not necessarily an EFF issue like a gun, but some of it is surveillance technology. So, you know, there are vehicles that the military uses that are little surveillance centers, those, you know, have been turned over to local police. So there is a serious concern here with militarization. Just to pivot, we've talked now about the cell site simulators and the drones and the license plate readers. Yet a fourth example of a mission crept technology is DNA testing. And so that rolled out as a way to be taken from people who have been convicted of violent felonies. And it has been expanded to people who have been arrested, not convicted, but for all manner of felonies. And so we've gone from a system of tracking, you know, a relatively small number of people to tracking, you know, a massive number of people. So once the police are used to taking, you know, DNA from people who've been arrested or convicted, and you have the technology of DNA extraction, you've got the training of how to conduct all of this. The mission creep is from, you know, convicted of most violent felony to arrested for virtually any felony. Yet another form of the mission creep.
So we've gotten to talk a lot about the problem of mission creep when it comes to surveillance. I'd like to move on a little bit and talk about what some of the solutions or interventions are here. What can our listeners do to sort of resist this?
So what the listeners can immediately do is tune in to what is happening in their communities. At the local level, their local police almost certainly is acquiring frightening surveillance technology. And perhaps there is a local club that is concerned with that, and so join that club. Hopefully there is information on the city council's website about, you know, what legislation is coming up, and so look at that. An additional thing that listeners can do is tune into the EFF. We have action alert systems where we urge people to call their legislators when there is an anti-surveillance piece of legislation. Ideally, people also would support us with contributions, but you can be on our action alert without giving us money. So that's what individual people can do. There's, of course, also a bunch of stuff that city councils and state legislators can do to address this problem.
Yeah, I have a friend from college. She saw some of this news coverage we've seen on the ALPRs, and she's a mother of small children. After reading all this coverage, came to realize that just about across the street from her house was one of these cameras, which she hadn't noticed before. And after seeing this, she's gotten very involved. She's talking to her city council and working on what they can do, given that there's like a contract renewal coming up for, in this case, flock safety in their community.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think just showing up at your own city hall is one of the most powerful things that can happen. And, you know, across America in the last year, there have been dozens of cities that have said no to their flock contracts because residents, neighbors showed up in city hall and said, we don't like this. We want you to stop. And, you know, we are a democracy. Our city councils often do listen to voters.
And that's sort of the second half that we've been circling around, which is elected officials have things that they can do as well, right?
Absolutely. And so, you know, there's a spectrum of laws that our city councils and our state legislatures and our Congress can enact. And to just give a quick summary before diving in, there's transparency, just like, what are you doing? There is democratic control. You can't do it until the city council votes. There is regulation. You know, you can only collect it or use it or store it in these ways, but not those ways. And then there's just like a flat prohibition. We're not going to have this in our city, which is what we're seeing a lot of right now with Flock. And so, you know, I would say to city council members who are looking at any technology, you know, this is your menu of choices. And just like rock bottom is there needs to be transparency, but maybe you want to, you know, step up to a prohibition on the city acquiring it without the democratic control. Maybe you want to step up from there to placing restraints on the collection, the use, the storage, the sharing. And maybe you want to step all the way up to just banning it. Maybe you don't want this in your city at all.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the first step that I'm really hoping we can get people over, right, is just with that skepticism, right? There's a lot of, there are people with economic interests in making this kind of surveillance technology even more prevalent, who tell certain stories. And at the very least, you can start thinking a little bit more critically about these, you know, often, like I said, fairly cinematic scenarios that are dreamt up.
Just to underline your last thought there, like, yes, skepticism. They are telling us this is going to save our lives, and they're using it to spy on protesters and immigrants and the Roma people. And so I think when the vendors and the police chiefs say, you know, give us this technology, we should be skeptical and we should worry about the mission creep.
Well, thanks again for stopping by, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So what do you think, Christian?
I already like knew a lot of this stuff listening or like reading EFF stuff over time. But just thinking about, you know, license plate readers are a thing that people are so worried about right now. And then, you know, seeing in real time the mission creep is, I feel like something like this is the first time I've experienced it firsthand. And it's not great seeing... We're going to use license plate readers just for, you know, finding stolen vehicles or something. And then like, oh, wait, we can actually record people who are like on their phones in their cars. I hate that. That's really unsettling, it, especially because I'm seeing those Flock cameras pop up everywhere right now. So it's almost validating to, you know, people's concerns are really valid right now about those cameras.
Right. I mean, I think we're presented with these really narrow scenarios, right, of how authorities say or plan to use these technologies, right? And it just doesn't take into account, like, okay, if you have a surveillance system that can track, like, a vehicles anywhere around the country, I suppose that is one thing you could use it for. But as we've seen, right, not only are there other sorts of law enforcement agencies that might be using this to invest other types of offenses, which may not even be a crime where you live, but also they can just use the technology itself. Oh, it takes pictures, right? You could use it to take a picture of somebody doing whatever.
Yeah, and I think in like Matt's blog specifically, he wrote about like a Flock safety policy that was like, it will not, the cameras will not be used to enforce traffic violations. And it just feels really scummy to see that either law enforcement or the surveillance companies can claim one thing and then do like a bait and switch, just sweep the rug out from under you and be like, no, actually we are going to do that. And there's really not any like transparency or accountability behind it. Like how is your average person driving on the street going to know, like, oh, now the Flock camera is like recording inside my vehicle and not just trying to capture the license plate or something like that?
Right. I think that really points out to the control things. I don't think it was an official policy. They did say it on their blog, right?
Okay.
But
yeah.
But in any case, Yeah, there's just very little sort of, I mean, if you don't have, especially legal barriers with actual enforcement, right? There's mm-hmm. very little to stop these technologies from being used for just about anything. And, you know, this was not even, there wasn't even some sort of, and this is a much lower bar, some sort of technical barrier, right? I don't know. I was embarrassed to bring this up a little bit in my conversation with Adam. But as we said, the authorities, the people who sell these surveillance technologies, they often present like truly like cinematic scenarios, ones that are pulled off of like from out of movies, out of television. And I can't help it. When I think of this, I think of the Batman supercomputer in The Dark Knight. I don't know if you remember this specifically from the movie, but it was effectively this like panopticon screen that Batman had that, oh, he could see anything that's happening in the city. And there's a barely resolved plot point about using this for good or evil. And then at the end of the movie, oh, he like blows up the computer because it's not good to have that. But that's like really sort of what happens, right? Is that these incredibly invasive surveillance technologies are like installed, sold, invoking these extreme scenarios that they could help with. But then it's just there every day. Then it's just sitting in the corner, even on days that something serious doesn't happen.
Yeah, everyone becomes a suspect, I guess, is like what we say pretty often. Yeah, when I was listening to the conversation with Adam, I was thinking about like all the movies I've watched, the Batman supercomputer hits hard. I think a lot about the I don't know if you ever played the Spider-Man game on the PlayStation 4, but like Spider-Man like hacks into the surveillance technology that Oscorp makes, and he can get real-time crime stuff right on his phone and respond. And it's like, from a gameplay standpoint, that's awesome, but like just thinking about EFFE stuff has really ruined my brain, where I'm like, oh wait, that's actually, I don't think that's what its intended use was, and now all of a sudden I'm being attacked by Spider-Man.
Right. I will say I have played that video game and enjoyed it and had a very, very similar reaction where it's like, wait, what? And right, it like only, like it really only makes sense in some sort of fictional scenario where it's like, oh, only one person has access to it. They're a total paragon of like righteousness, an infallible, you know, superhero. And like, then we're like kind of okay with it. But what's reality look like? Reality looks like, oh, dozens of people have access to this. With ALPR, we know that there's like not a warrant requirement. So they can just, you know, log in, look up whatever. And unsurprisingly, these systems end up being misused, abused for whatever.
Yeah, totally. Dang, there is no Spider-Man in real life.
Yeah, I mean, it should give you like some sense of when somebody's like selling a surveillance technology and the image that comes to mind is like a literal comic book, that maybe this isn't like grounded in reality.
It's a really fair point, yeah.
Okay, so I know you were out for a previous episode, Christian, but we tried out a new segment, and I think it worked pretty well. It's a little bit of a different kind of headline quiz. Did you get a chance to hear this?
I did. Thank you to Jason for subbing in. And I, with this segment particularly, I'm like, is it good to get it wrong? Because does that mean like I'm going outside, I'm not doom scrolling and stuff, or do I want to get these right? I'm so conflicted with myself right now.
I have similar deep conflicts between being informed and consuming just too much information. Okay, so for those who didn't hear it, we're going to have three rounds. In each round, I'm going to give Christian two headlines, one of which is real. The other one, I made it up, okay? And in the end, I'm going to give Christian a grade, and also all of you a grade based on how many real ones you identified. Are you ready for this, Christian?
All right, let's see it.
All right, first pair of headlines. First one, leaked Cash Patel emails reveal FBI director's Tamagotchi obsession, or leaked Claude code shows Anthropic building mysterious Tamagotchi feature.
Whoa, I thought the first one was going to be fake because I was like, well, the Tamagotchi game's coming out, so he's just thinking Tamagotchi, but now both have it. I think that the first one is fake.
That is correct. You got it right. Recently, a bunch of the Anthropic Claude AI code was released. People have been going through it. I feel like the headline itself is a little misleading. The feature that people uncovered looks more like a kind of Clippy, right? Or a was it Bonzi Buddy? Anyway, it's more of a little assistant than like a digital pet, I think. But great job, Christian. You've passed the Tamagotchi news test. Okay, second pair of headlines. Is it Iran goes after Trump with AI-generated Lego propaganda, or Black Eyed Peas condemn White House use of Boom Boom Pow in Iran war video?
I feel like both happened, actually, but I'm pretty sure I saw the Black Eyed Peas headline. I think the first one's fake and the Black Eyed Peas is right.
I made that one up.
Dang it.
Sorry.
Both are so like things that are happening, but like the details are a little shuffled around. This is great. You're doing great.
Okay. Third headline pair. Is it an AI agent was banned from creating Wikipedia articles, then wrote angry blogs about it, or John Travolta subreddit bans John Travolta for posting weird photos of John Travolta?
I know the John Travolta one is fake, and I'm pretty sure it's riffing off of the wasn't it one of the Beatles that got banned on Reddit for promoting themselves on Reddit or something?
It was close to that. It was Paul McCartney. There's some dispute about what exactly happened, right? That it only appeared that Paul McCartney was banned from the Paul McCartney subreddit. But I couldn't resist writing a headline that had John Travolta in it three times.
I can't believe you didn't stumble at all reading it, honestly.
Yeah, and you know, also it's just too fun of a headline to actually be run anywhere, sadly. All right. Well, you got two out of three, Christian. You are very online, according to the scale that I created.
I'll take very online over getting three out of three, which is certified doom scroller.
That's correct.
I don't know if I want that.
That's correct, which is what Jason achieved last week. The other scores are 0 out of 3 news loser and 1 out of 3 habitual grass toucher.
Classy. I like it.
And now events and opportunities. Christian, how can people connect with EFF in the weeks to come?
Yeah, first, EFF Cindy Cohen is continuing her book tour around Privacy's Defender, her personal chronicle of standing up to the Justice Department, taking on the NSA, and tangling with the FBI to protect our digital rights. In the coming weeks, you'll be able to catch Cindy in Iowa City, Washington, D.C., and New York City. And on April 16th, we're continuing our Affecting Change livestream series with our next installment, Can't Stop the Signal, where EFF and Amnesty International will be diving deep into internet shutdowns in Iran and around the world. And on August 14th through 16th, you can catch EFF at the HOPE Conference in New York City. Through the month of April, our friends at HOPE are donating 10% of ticket sales to EFF. So grab your ticket now and hack the planet while benefiting EFF. As a side note, I'm so stoked to see that HOPE is back in Manhattan. Great time. You can learn more about all these events and other ways to see EFF at eff.org/events. Finally, EFF is hiring an assistant director of EU policy to co-lead our legal advocacy and lobbying efforts across European institutions. This is a fully remote position based in Europe. Learn more about this job and other opportunities at eff.org/about/opportunities.
Thanks, Christian. Well, that's it for this week's Effector. Effector is a podcast by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the leading nonprofit defending online civil liberties. Our theme music is I Don't Know by Grapes.
EFF promotes digital innovation, defends free speech, fights illegal surveillance, and protects rights and freedoms for all. Become an EFF member today at eff.org/podfan.